Thank you. So today I'm going to be presenting a look at the paper install ecosystem. This is work that I did with Juan, Christian, and Vern. Juan's at the IMDA Software Institute in Madrid, and Christian, Vern, and I are all at ICSI in Berkeley. So the first thing I'm going to show you is a screenshot from one of the paper install services that we've been monitoring. And as you can see, the service promises to pay out up to $150 per 1,000 installs for hosts in the United States. And they have different prices depending on the country that the host is located in. So if you're trying to sell them hosts in Canada, you'd only get $110 per 1,000. Germany, you get $30 per 1,000, et cetera. And in general, these kinds of paper install services are a specialization of the malware community that's designed for botmasters to quickly bootstrap their botnet. So there's a lot of players in this market. This is one called Gangstabucks, and they have a very specific theme to them, as you can clearly see from their website. These kinds of services have been around for a while. In this case, these guys go back 5 or 6 years, and they've kind of evolved over time and changed the way that they've been branding themselves. The most recent incarnation of their website is called Gangstabucks. But more interesting than the theme that they have up here is the little white words that are probably a little difficult to read, which are the features that they promise their affiliates. So one of the features they offer is guaranteed weekly payouts. They also have round-the-clock support for affiliates, and they have user-friendly software. So these are all things that paper install services are kind of advertising to lure people in to become affiliates at their services. So if you have a dispute with one of these paper install services, maybe they don't have software that's user-friendly enough for you, you can turn to the forums and go to one of these kinds of things and, you know, dock their star rating a little bit or leave a note that said they're not paying promptly enough or they're not crediting you for all of your installs that you're performing, et cetera. And there's a number of forums such as this that exist that list paper install services as well as the ratings that their affiliates give them. So today I'm going to be talking about the market for malware installation. And the goal with our study was to measure and understand the paper install ecosystem. And our approach to do this is to infiltrate four paper install programs. And when I say infiltrate, we don't become affiliates or become clients of these services. Instead, we participate in their command and control networks to be able to measure and understand how they're distributing malware. So to do this, we develop milkers that automatically download malware. And once we have downloaded the malware, we execute it and classify it based on some classification rules that we've built. The result of this is that we get good insights into the paper install business. We have real-time monitoring capability of the malware that's being distributed. We can see as the paper install services begin distributing new binaries and new types of malware. We can also look at the types of clients that are using paper install. So we know if information stealing versus click fraud versus spam is more prevalent on paper install or less prevalent, and the types of clients that choose, for example, geographic locations, which I'll talk about later. We can also start to look at the financial impacts of botnet takedown. So over the past few years, we've seen a rise of these industry-led takedowns of command and control servers for botnets. And these have a direct impact on the botmaster to their control of the bots. In some cases, we believe that the botnet owners are simply going out and repurchasing the host that they've lost in order to rebuild their botnet and recover whatever capability they had, whether it's spam or information stealing. So for this talk, I'm going to first give you background on the paper install ecosystem and describe how the whole model works. We'll talk about the infiltration and monitoring of the four paper install programs that we've infiltrated, and then I'll present some results and measurements that we're able to perform from our infiltration vantage point. So the paper install ecosystem has three entities. The first is the clients. And the clients are the people who come with a piece of malware that they want installed. So this is somebody who has developed their own spam bot or developed a bot of some kind that they want just to be run on a victim's PC. They don't have an infection vector, or they choose not to have an infection vector in favor of paper install services. The paper install service purchases compromised hosts from their affiliates and resells them to these clients on demand. So in all the cases that we're going to talk about today, the paper install programs are affiliate services. So rather than doing the infection themselves, they contract the work out to their affiliates. The affiliates are actually the individuals who undergo the compromise of the end hosts. And they're responsible for, well, first compromising the box, but then also running an executable that it belongs to the paper install provider. This executable phones home, talks to the paper install service, and then gets a list of binaries to install for the clients. So this allows the paper install service to perform a few different installs for every end host infection and also credit the various parties that need to be credited. So in this case, the pay-per-install service pays the affiliate for an install and receives money from the client for every install they perform. So if we look in more detail at what happens with an affiliate after an affiliate installation, so we're going to start from an affiliate binary. And this is the binary that the affiliate is given to, or given from the pay-per-install service. This binary phones home and first receives a list of binaries to install. And the colors indicate, the green color indicates malware, and the blue and light blue colors indicate a pay-per-install service related binary. So the first thing this affiliate binary does is download three new binaries. One of these is malware, and the other two relate to pay-per-install. The second one, the light blue color, is actually a different pay-per-install program. So the first thing it does is involve a second pay-per-install program in the mess. We iterate this once more, we see more malware being downloaded as well as more pay-per-install executables. And the final round, we see kind of this explosion of malware. So now we have over 12 different binaries have been downloaded through this sequence, and this is an execution that lasted a little under 5 minutes. You have to keep in mind that this is only one specific execution. Each time you execute the affiliate binaries, they download a different set of malware, and in turn, the clients are then different, which can cause an entirely different execution each time you execute this. So in the next part of my talk, I'm going to talk about how we did the infiltration. So at a high level, we've collected malware that's shown that 12 of the 20 most popular families of malware are being distributed by pay-per-install services. And this doesn't mean that this pay-per-install is the only mechanism that this malware chooses to use, just that they are present in the pay-per-install ecosystem. So to do this, we infiltrated 4 pay-per-install command and control networks, which give us a continual monitoring capability of their command and control. So we can see as new binaries are being pushed out, we download them. And we also download from geodiverse locations. This is to capture the behavior that we saw with the first slide, where we had different countries and different price points. So we want to be able to capture, you know, the effect of clients choosing which countries they are installing in. In all, we collected a little over 1 million client binaries through the course of our study. This is about 6 or 7 months worth. In all, there were 9,153 distinct binaries, and this is calculating distinctness by MD5 sum in this case. So to do this, we have our pay-per-install milking system. And it has 3 phases to it. The first phase is dropper milking. And so what we're actually doing is contacting the command and control servers for the pay-per-install programs and asking them for a list of binaries to install. And in most cases, this requires understanding the command and control protocols, you know, having the correct encryption and the correct keys for the process. But in the end, we get a list of binaries to install and a place to get them from. So here we go ahead and we fetch all of the executables we're told to install, but we don't actually run them. So we've eliminated all the kind of nasty side effects of the execution that's happening here. In the second phase, we actually go through and we do execution and traffic recording. So this happens in the GQ Honey Farm, which is a controlled environment for running malware experiments. There's actually a paper coming out this fall from one of my co-authors called GQ Practical Containment for Measuring Modern Malware Systems. This will be at IMC 2011, where they describe in much more detail how the farm works. But for our purposes, it's enough to know that the Honey Farm cuts off all external communication with the internet for the malware. We provide a number of services internal to the Honey Farm that allow the bot to think it's actually connected to the internet, such as we will answer DNS replies with the correct results. We have syncs that speak common protocols such as SMTP, so they can believe that they are talking to legitimate mail servers but never actually send spam. And these kinds of features are in the Honey Farm that allow the bots to execute. When we run all of the malware we've collected from the dropper infrastructure, we run the traces through Bro, which extract features, and we store this into the traffic store. The third phase is the classification stage. And what we do here is we use hand-generated signatures to identify malware that is identical. So despite a different MD5 sum, there's a number of samples that are going to be just simply repacked. And to get around this, we use network clustering and identify samples of malware that all have identical traffic. We then manually merge these groups of malware into clusters, and these clusters signify some sort of malware family in this case. And sometimes we can even tag the clusters with the actual family name. And so the result of that is this table up here. So you can see that the types of malware that we're seeing being distributed by pay-per-install. So we have here, the name is the common family name, and this is something you might see in an antivirus report or in a write-up by a security company. The monetization kind of briefly describes what the piece of malware is doing. And the last column, the scene column, is whether we see it in the paper install. So these are the top 20 pieces of malware as documented by FireEye in terms of total world prevalence. So 12 of these 20 we observed being dropped by paper install, and three of them were actually not sure what the family name represents. So we were unable to figure out, you know, what a traffic sample from that piece of malware would look like. So based on the milking, we can start to look at some interesting properties of the binaries that are being downloaded and distributed. The first thing is repacking, or sometimes called crypting. And what this does is changes the program content without changing any of the functionality. The goal here is to subvert any sort of antivirus signature that exists that is purely content-based or purely binary content-based. And in general, the frequency that malware authors repack their executables reflects their concern about the signatures actually detecting their binaries. In general, we found that the clients of paper install have a varying strategy towards repacking their malware. On average, though, they will repack their samples about every 11 days. And this is for all the families that we identified. We had a unique opportunity to also look at the affiliate binaries that are being given to the affiliates from the paper install programs. So these are usually repacked by the paper install program. And the paper install programs will often recommend that their affiliates update the binaries every day. They repack once a day, and they provide new affiliate binaries in order to get around any sort of antivirus based on content signatures here. One of the services, called Zlob, actually repacks on the fly. They provide their affiliates with a URL that they can go to retrieve a new executable. And each time you request an executable from that URL, you'll get a distinct binary. The binary always has the same execution pattern, but its MD5 sum is always different. So if we look in more detail as to the way repacking works with paper install clients, we're going to focus here on two families of malware. One is called Rootstock, and the second is Security Suite. So the x-axis in this case is date. So you can see as the day goes on, as the month goes on, we have new MD5s being introduced for each of the different families of malware. On the top, it's very clear that there's no outages. The authors of Rootstock have a binary available to the paper install service every day throughout the month of August. On the bottom, we see a little bit different behavior. We see a lot more binaries. Notice that on this case, the y-axis is almost a factor of 10 higher than that for Rootstock. On the top, we saw 15 binaries. On the bottom, we see well over 100 different executables for the same family of malware. So if we look a little closer at what happened with Security Suite, in this case, we have on the top is the same chart that I just showed you. It's Security Suite plotted through the month of August. On the bottom is the overlay of two families that both use the same Security Suite command and control networks. The yellow, that fills in the holes, is a variant of Security Suite with anti-virtualization technology. So it just so happens that throughout the month of August, Security Suite was distributing two different binaries at different times of the month, one with anti-virtualization checks and one without. And when one wasn't available, the other was. So throughout the month, they had availability throughout the entire month, but with different types of binaries. And this is likely due to the packers or cryptors that are being used these days have checkboxes that allow the malware author to choose whether they want to have anti-virtualization checks or not. And one time it was checked and one time it wasn't checked. Or they could have been using different commercial packers that provide different anti-virtualization capabilities. So the next thing we can start to measure with paper install programs is the geographic distribution of malware. So to do this, we run all of the milkers that pull down executables from the paper install through Tor with exit points in 15 different countries. And we instruct Tor to provide us a geographically diverse set of exit points in order to do this. But we do still have to verify that the exit node is actually in the country we want. And we do this using the MaxMind GeoIP database. It's important to note that one of the three paper install programs that we infiltrated actually blocks all Tor access. So we were unable to milk them through Tor. Instead, we use a variety of other exits, non-Tor exits, to access their networks. And the geographic distribution of malware is important because the clients of paper install providers are given a choice for where they want their installs done. And this goes back to the slide I showed you with Gold Install, is there's a different price point based on a different country for installs. So these are affiliate prices, the affiliate prices are much the same as the prices presented to clients, such that the US and the U.S., Great Britain, and Canada are typically at the high end, and the rest of the world varies a lot depending on the service, all the way down to, in some cases, $13 or less per 1,000 hosts. So as we see, the prices vary depending on install location. And this is important to the clients because they will monetize on the end host in a different way. So if you are distributing fake antivirus software, you might actually have to localize your malware, because your malware actually presents a prompt to the user and instructs them to do something. And so you would have to carefully choose which countries you distribute your malware to in order to make sure that they can understand what you're trying to get across. It's also the case that stolen credit card value could vary between countries. So information stealers that are stealing credit card numbers in the United States versus the rest of the world might have a different amount of money that they can get from each credit card stolen. There's also legal limitations, and this is going to sound surprising, but some malware authors are unwilling to operate in their home countries. So they are fine infecting hosts, you know, in the rest of the world, but when it comes to their own country, they refuse to run. And this is, we believe, due to the fact that they have to deal with local law enforcement at the end of the day rather than international law enforcement, and one is much more scary than the other. So to highlight some of the distinct geographic distribution we see with paper install programs, we have four different families of malware up here. On the x-axis, we have a different the country codes for the countries where we were milking from, and on the y-axis, you see the fraction of executables that was downloaded from each exit point. So for the first one in the upper left-hand corner, we have a bot called Glishug, and this is performing click fraud. And overwhelmingly, they choose to operate within the United States. Now, we see a little bit in the rest of the world, but I think it's almost 80% of all the samples we saw being distributed were distributed to hosts that claimed they were in the United States. On the upper right corner, we see a bot called Ruskill. And Ruskill is a denial of service bot, and they overwhelmingly choose Japan, Korea, and then somewhat Greece and Portugal as their staging ground for denial of service. And this is probably due to the pricing. So those are, for most of the paper install services we saw, these are the cheaper end of the spectrum. And it's also possible that they have specific targets in mind and they want to place the bots in the proper location. On the bottom left-hand corner, Roostock is a spam bot. It was one of the largest spam bots for a long time until its takedown. Overwhelmingly, they really don't care where they're installed. They're willing to take any host, and they can spam from just about anywhere they're installed, and they're happy doing that. This is kind of typical of what we saw with spam bots. They pretty much don't prefer one country or another. Then lower right-hand box is another form of adware in this case that chooses to install itself in Europe and the United States rather than the rest of the world. And presumably all the clients here have reasons that they're choosing more expensive countries over less expensive countries. And this impacts the decision that they make here. And we have, for the most part, we have graphs that detail this in more detail in the paper for all the families, and we can also provide a little more information based on the geographic distribution offline. So the final thing that I wanted to talk about today is a particularly fun case. So we actually observed affiliates of the paper install programs that are doing arbitrage. So these affiliates are, or these individuals are affiliates at one paper install program and clients at another. And we actually observed this for a couple days at a time, where the price differential was such that you could make money by simply buying installs from one service and turning around and selling them to another. So in the example we observed, for paper install one, they were buying installs for $60 per 1,000 hosts in Greece, and they were selling installs for $40 also in Greece, and this is per 1,000 hosts again. And there's a number of times when the affiliates have an opportunity to exploit a price differential. So as the demand and supply goes up for the different paper install programs, they might change their prices at different rates. So in this case, this price differential was only available for like 24 to 48 hours, but it was enough that the affiliate could make probably a pretty sizable sum of money before that window closed. And there, with the variety of paper install services out there, there's plenty of opportunity for arbitrage in these kinds of cases. So in conclusion, I've presented the first systematic study of the paper install ecosystem. We've shown how infiltration of these types of networks can provide a unique opportunity for malware intelligence. And we use this to perform several measurements, which I've outlined up here. We've shown that much of the world's malware is using paper install to some extent. We've shown that you can measure the repacking rates of binaries and get insight into how the different families of malware are actually choosing to repack their executables. We've also shown that clients do, in fact, have geographic targets that they want to infect rather than just getting their malware out there. So now we have plenty of time for questions, so I'll go ahead and take those.
Rick Vero. Yeah, great work. Could you go back to the arbitrage slide?
The arbitrage
slide. No, just arbitrage. Yeah, it seems like you got that backwards. You're buying high, selling low.
Oh, sorry. This refers to the paper install actually buying rather than the affiliate buying.
Okay, got it. Thank you. And the other is, are there other ways that you can anonymize your location than just using Tor? I mean, perhaps you could find other research organizations that are willing to share addresses with you, relays essentially.
Yeah, so that would be great. If there are research organizations that would like to provide IP addresses, we'd be very interested in talking. We also use VPN services, proxy services that are mostly commercial for the most part in order to do this. That's how we get around when a paper install has blocked Tor, for example. We turn to solutions like that. Tor is very convenient because it provides kind of the selection of country without having to work with the companies directly.
Okay. Hey, thanks.
Dan Farmer. With the really inexpensive cloud computing, like 3 cents an hour for a Windows box, could you make a profit by sending a bunch of those to these clouds and then just turning them off after an hour? Or how's the payment work there?
So I think the answer is yes, you could probably make a lot of money doing something like that. But at the end of the day, the paper install services actually do kind of look at what's happening from their affiliates. And so if they see a lot of duplicate installs, say from the same IP address range, they have complete control over whether you get paid or not at the end of
sure.
the day. And they actually, I showed at the beginning this kind of reputation. Affiliates that do installs will repeatedly report that they're getting their install shaved. And this is likely due to the fact that they think they're installing twice, but on the same system or on the same set of systems. And the affiliate program is simply not crediting them for it.
Okay, thank you.
Chris. Hello. My name is Wolfgang Kandek. I was raised in Germany, so I'm not sure I should be a little bit offended or happy that it's only $30 versus $150. What's the reason for that? I mean, I don't see the German computers be any worse, or are they are the Germans less susceptible to the installations? What's the problem there?
Yeah, so actually, you shouldn't be worried about Germany. The prices have actually gone up a lot in Germany recently. So since we wrote this paper, the last time we checked, they were actually leading the bunch in some of these providers. I think most of it has to do with the client's ability to monetize, A lot of, going back to the, let's see if we can find the slide. So there's a fair amount of malware that's being distributed on the paper install networks that is not in the top 20 up here of the world's most popular malware. And a lot of it was click fraud and other types of ad abuse. And I think that they're still trying to figure out how to go about abusing those types of services. And so the clients are still trying to get around the ad fraud detection, basically, algorithms that the companies have deployed. And so this definitely influences how they choose to buy systems. So I think the paper install price is really just based on client demand. And so as the clients start to figure out how to make money in new locations, they'll start doing that.
Okay. I know there's some efforts in Germany on the ISP level against malware. Do you think that has any influence on that?
It is certainly possible. The networks, for the most part, are pretty easy to detect at the network level. They have very distinct signatures for accessing their, for phoning home and collecting the binaries. So if you have good IT staff that is capable of doing the filtering or detection, that would definitely help.
Okay. So I'm Riccardo Pelizzi. I was wondering, you said that you've seen 12 families that were using the PPI ecosystem for distribution. But this does not mean, of course, that they exclusively use the PPX ecosystem. So I was wondering if you will be able, or if you already built on this data, to figure out how big is the PPI ecosystem compared to the whole malware ecosystem.
Yeah, so we're definitely working on that. So we know that, especially with these top 20, a lot of them are using other means to do infections, and especially for things that are kits. So if you see the little check next to a kit, that means that this isn't necessarily one big botnet, but a bunch of little botnets. And so the operators for each one of the little botnets could choose a variety of different ways to distribute their malware. And that definitely has an impact on how we look at the way malware is installed. We are currently working on a follow-on or to supplement this data with install volumes, as well as get a perspective of other installation vectors that are being worked on for these same clients.
Hi. Have you investigated the payment methods and payment mechanisms for paper installs? Are the digital currencies that they're using for paying out, are they the same? Are they sort of esoteric? Have you looked at that at all?
Only so much as we browse around and look at the different affiliate programs. They usually advertise the types of cash or money that they accept. Overwhelmingly, they take web money. Some of them will also pay out in PayPal, but web money is definitely the preferred currency at the moment.
Thanks.
Srinivas, UNC Chapel Hill. I was wondering, when you looked at the DNS data, were there any kind of patterns or hierarchies that you noticed when you specifically saw the command and control protocol, for example?
So the question is about the DNS pattern specifically?
Yeah, right.
So we are able to identify, just as you would expect, certain strains of malware by the domain names. For the command and control networks, there are definitely patterns to how they use DNS. A lot of these, like I said, have been around for a long time. And in that case, some of the domains that they've been using have been around for just as long as they have. So they go back almost a decade in some cases.
Did you see any sophistication in the hierarchy set up, or were they using some kind of naming scheme for geographic locations?
No. So we haven't seen any presence of any sort of interesting DNS features for example, geographic fingerprinting.
Right.
We have not seen that.
Okay. Thanks.
Hi, Jan Mirkovic, ISI. I have a maybe different question, but what's the implication of your work on defenses against botnets? I mean, I see it's very interesting to understand how they operate, but what's the implication? Maybe I see the implication in the physical world. You could, notify authorities in those countries to take down certain services, but what's the implication for researchers that work on defenses? And I have another question, which is a little shorter. Do you have a way of estimating the size of size of botnets that people recruit for different types of malicious activities, such as spam versus DDoS?
Yeah, so the first question on the implications to other researchers for this. So I think it's really important to look at the samples of malware that you're receiving, especially when you start the study, as being part of this ecosystem, is that they don't always have infection mechanisms. They don't have propagation. They don't have exploits built into them necessarily. And in those cases, a lot of the times they might be turning to paper install programs. The project actually started off with us receiving a lot of malware to study from our industry partners. And we were given binaries that were told, for example, this is a spam bot. And we'd be handed a paper install executable. And when we go ahead and run it, no spam came out of it. And actually, every time we ran it, no spam came out of it. And so we started to dig a little deeper, and we found that we're being handed things with a specific AV label or antivirus signature match, and in fact it's completely different. And the things that it drops and installs are then completely different every time you execute it. And so I think this is really important as you look at the antivirus labels to keep these things in mind, is that it might be a dropper that is just misclassified.
Chris, let me add one thing. I think one of the real implications is you can get a real-time feed of the new stuff. This milking, you can just go out there and say, well, what's the latest thing? And if they don't know that you're milking them, they just tee it up for you. So the intelligence opportunity is really big here.
Chris, this is great data. I was wondering if you had any information about the distribution of platforms that are targeted, Windows XP, Windows 7, Mac OS, anything you could share with us?
So actually, our platform is always Windows XP. So we haven't branched out to have different platforms for running these executables yet. This is something that we're working on right now to move into various forms of Windows and things like that. It would be great to do, though. I think this would be a very interesting area to explore.
Hi, I'm Wen Yuan. So I noticed in your data sheet that China is not on the list. So I'm wondering, is that because China is not an attractive target for malware, or it's because it's hard to get data? in China's IP domain?
So we were actually able to collect from within China for the most part. I think we, well, so maybe technically we are, our exit points were in Hong Kong. So that is a little different. The paper install services do have price points for pretty much everywhere, and China is one of the countries that is on their list. They tend to be grouped into the, a lot of the Asian countries actually get grouped into Asia. And they're just simply a bulk rate for any host in Asia. And usually the differences here are for Japan and Korea for the most part. They, for some reason, have a different rate. And I think it has a lot to do with the monetization, and not so much that we can't access the data or get hosts there.
Quick question, Chris. Mac versus Windows. So you said you only researched Windows. That makes sense. Do the paper install providers, do they offer anything for Macs? Is there a market already?
So we've only observed the affiliate binaries be Windows executables. But again, we haven't actually signed up as affiliates for any of these programs, so we're only heading them from from our partners in industry. We don't participate directly. It's possible that they just choose to get the Windows binaries and hand them to us rather than making Mac binaries available.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again.